There is another event scheduled this weekend here in St. Louis that is a little bit different. It's an event, an opera about organized labor, and connects the region's labor past with the present. Cast members include union workers new to stage performances. It's titled Then and Now Again, a Workers' Opera. The production is under the creative guidance of Agnes Wilcox, who is the director of the production, and Freeman Word, a performance poet, writer, and a St. Louis hip-hop artist. Welcome. Nice to have you both.
Nice to be here.
Nice to give of you to give us some time at a time when I know you're very, very busy. But so thanks again. Agnes, I'll start with you. Some would, I think, say that this is unusual operatic material. What brought it to you and to you to it?
I need to say first that it's not an opera the way opera theater makes an opera. I think of it in the back of my mind as a labor cabaret. We're looking at labor history in St. Louis, which is rich, and we're approaching it with music and sketches and all sorts of approaches so that we can talk about the history of St. Louis without being boring.
Why did you want to take this particular subject on?
It's very important right now. I have a number of friends who are working with Show Me 15, which is working for a higher minimum wage. And I think these are the issues of our time, that we need to be sure that people are employed and well employed with benefits so that they can be productive members of society.
All right. Well, that's a noble effort, certainly in the minds of a great many. Freeman, what brought you to the project?
Well, I was originally approached because of some of the work that I've done previously with Bread and Roses, Missouri, where I had done some educational work with youth in the community surrounding issues of labor. So this is not a new topic for me, but this is definitely a new approach.
Have you written some of the material?
I have written some of the material.
Uh-huh. And tell me something about the language of labor as you see it.
Well, it was interesting because when starting this project, I was given a lot of historical materials to review. And I found that a startling amount of the historical materials on the history of labor were very racially homogenous, one might say. And even so, you know, gender-wise, there was homogeny. So looking at that and just examining how labor has always fundamentally been about the people, I wanted to make sure that we made a show that was about the people.
Just give me your definition of racially homogenous here for this context.
White.
Could you be more concise?
Not at all.
All right. So the labor movement is basically a white movement, and until, I guess, up to World War II, basically not gender neutral. It was a male preserve, wasn't it?
Exactly.
How far back do you go, Agnes?
We go back to the 1930s, to the hello girls at Bell Telephone, the women who say, hello, number please. And we go through the March for Hunger, which was in St. Louis in 1930, where people came together, mostly workers, to try to convince the powers that be that what was being given in what they called relief, which we call welfare, which is trying to help the unemployed, was so far below what was needed that people were starving to death in St. Louis.
And the unions actually are what brought them out of that, and actually, particularly after World War II, created the middle class. I mean, it certainly expanded it, needless to say. The period that you're talking about was a very violent period in American labor history. How do you address that?
We do not directly address the violence. Yeah. There is so much strength in the arguments that we feel we don't need to show or to highlight the violence. We talk about it a little bit because the telephone company bought off the cops, and actually the garment workers, the women garment workers, sued the cops later because when they were arrested, they were abused, and they sued.
Mm-hmm. It was a difficult time, an important time in our history. Freeman, what did you learn aside from the racial homogeny, if homogeny is actually a word?
I don't know if it is.
Neither do
but
I.
But I'm a poet, so poetic license.
Right.
I do want to say something to clarify. Mm-hmm. I am a direct descendant of the free laborers of this country, mm-hmm. you know, both in the American Indian sense and in the Black American sense. And so when I say that labor history is homogenous, I mean labor historiography. I mean the way that labor history is written about is homogenous. Mm-hmm. Even when we examine figures like Mother Jones, we see her relationship to the Black coal miners, mm-hmm. you know, so there always was. And when you look at movies like Matewan, they show the racial dynamics, mm-hmm. how even whiteness was constructed politically. So for me, a lot of what I was able to learn was who gets written into history, who gets written out, and how art can be a vehicle to tell the actual narrative as it should be told.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a mm-hmm. moment. Art, and the role that it can play mm-hmm. in social justice, if you will, social change. You're a young man. What is your impression of that, and how can art and the arts change our social structure?
I spend a lot of time in the Justice Center. I spend a lot of time in the Juvenile Detention Center. I spend a lot of time in the community centers and the schools. And what I see is that if I were to come in and give an essay or a speech or some sort of historically themed talk about many of the proper and important historical contexts, I would not be received. But if I put that same exact content into a rap, into a poem, into a short story that has rhythmic elements, I've got the attention of the youth. They engage with it. They're interested in it. They want to debate and they want to contribute to the creation of more of it.
How much rap is in this particular production, if any?
You'll have to come and see. There's a fair amount.
Now, wait a minute. That's not the way we work around here.
There's a fair amount, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely hip-hop influence.
Can you give me, off the top of your head, can you give me an example?
Of from the show?
Yeah.
There's the Frederick Douglass poem, We Raised the Wheat, which we use as our opening, because it talks about how the slaves raised the wheat, but of course the white masters ate the bread. We also use a piece of music by Kanye West, and we use a piece of music inspired by Lin-Manuel Miranda and his Broadway show Hamilton.
Oh wow! Well, you're picking some very delightful fruit there when you bring all of that in. It's a very popular fruit as well.
Yes,
you have a number of the members of your cast are union workers, if I may put it that way. That's mm-hmm. exactly what they are, and others related to organized labor. These are not professionals, I take it, in terms of theatrics.
They are now.
Yeah. They're a very bold group that wants to communicate with an audience. And they take great risks in putting themselves forward to the best of their ability. And that is part of the charm, is that they're real people. And you know they're real people. They're not movie stars. They're not stage stars. They are people who are using theater and music to communicate with you, and it's joyful.
Where did you find them, and how are they doing? You've got just a couple of days to go before you hit the stage.
They're doing wonderfully well. Yeah. Some of the material they wrote, which always makes it easier to perform because it comes from your heart and not from the page or from someone else. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to make a comment about that writing. You know, when we say written, I think we have to remember the ways in which the written word has evolved from the spoken word. And that much of the time in these rehearsals and the time in the creative process of this show was actually getting people to participate in hip hop rituals like the freestyle cipher, mm-hmm. and then incorporating the content generated from ciphers and things where people were freestyle rapping into the show. So you're actually getting the raw, content that people have generated throughout the process.
You know, that's not always an easy thing to do. I mean, that rhythm and what you're suggesting here is not something that everybody can do and do easily, or am I wrong?
I think you are completely wrong, sir. Your heartbeat has a rhythm. Your breath has a rhythm. You walk with the rhythm. You talk with the rhythm. The amount that you blink has a certain cadence. Everything that you do in your human body has a rhythm. All we do is set that rhythm to music and voice. That's it. That's all we're doing.
So I'm just one heartbeat away from being Kanye West, I guess. Is that what we're saying here?
Kanye's heart is a special case.
That's what I'm getting at here. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that because, you know, some people can sing and perform and follow any of those rhythms, and others can't. You know, so that's my whole point. Getting people who can't to perform is a challenge.
Well, can and cannot are very different from someone who has spent a lot of time practicing and someone who has not. Yeah. I think that's what we're talking about here, is that some people are more amateurish and some people are more professional in their approach, but everyone can do it. Yeah. I can sing a high note. It may crack the glass in the studio, but I can do it.
All right. Well, Agnes, come on, follow up on this. As you're seeing this and as you're dealing with these folks, teaching them, I guess, how to do it, tell me about that.
I think that language is our greatest power in this case. Yes, it's singing, but it's language in rhythm. We find that when actors improvise, they use words they didn't even know they knew. They just come right out of their mouths, and they speak poetically even though they do not consider themselves capable of it. It's very exciting.
Well, how much improvisation is involved in all of this?
We have done a lot of improvisation. We have now codified the script, and it is formalized. But there was a lot of improvisation that went into it.
And a lot of that, obviously, because it's improv, had to come from the cast members.
Mm-hmm.
And they're drawing from their own experience, I assume.
Yes.
Can you give me some examples of the kinds of things that came out of this that maybe you didn't expect?
We have an actor who is working the night shift. And it's not the right shift for her. She is a day person. And she talks about wanting to find a job on a day shift. I've worked days and I've worked nights, but I was 18 years old, so what did I know? I could do anything at that point. But this is a grown woman, and we don't think a lot about the people who work 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's a killer.
They're invisible.
Yes.
Yeah. As are so many people in our society today, the kind of people that you talked about at the very beginning who are working hard and trying to make it and trying to achieve parity, if you will, with the rest of us, they're invisible. Is this something that you're drawn to in this particular production?
This production is about making the invisible visible.
Okay.
We have fast food workers. We have people who clean. And being with them has made me realize every time I walk into a very clean ladies' room, I have someone to thank because they did their job beautifully and with a commitment that a lot of people don't have in their work.
Freeman, what do you want people to take away from this production, specifically take away?
I think the importance of projects like this is that there is a story that isn't being told. Even when we talk about the fight for 15, even when we talk about the labor unions, we don't necessarily see how all of those things culminate in a mutual struggle for human dignity, which is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Everyone labors.
Well, this production comes at an interesting time in our regional history here, and I'm thinking back, obviously, to what's been going on the last couple of years following the Michael Brown shooting. Again, going back to the idea of the arts playing a role, I assume that part of the motivation here is to help people kind of understand what caused Ferguson to happen after the shooting, and you know, moving beyond where we are today.
Yes, I will say I think we need to be careful when we say cause, you know, but I'm absolutely hearing you and feeling like there is a definite economic impetus for everything that has happened up until now and everything that continues to happen around the country. And until we look fundamentally at some of the issues that have led to where we are, I don't think that we'll have any luck addressing it with other ways.
Agnes, your thought there?
I agree with Freeman. If you can't earn a living wage, what do you have? And if you can see how various parts of society are making sure that you do not have what I consider a living wage, I would be angry.
Hmm. Well, obviously, a lot of people are. There's no question about that. You know, another interesting point about the timing of your particular production is that unions are in very sharp decline now. They're mere shadow of what they once were, and therefore unable to really keep those boats at the higher level they had been before. How do you address that in your production?
I think what we do is try to educate our audience about the importance of unions. My very first job was as a Teamster worker in a warehouse. And I learned a great deal about how hard the work is, how you must be on time. There is no slack. There are rules, and you observe them. And it was a very good lesson for a young woman.
Why do you think unions have gone into decline?
I think the income disparity in this country encourages that decline. Because when we don't have a middle class, we don't know how to create a middle class, and we don't know what action to take to create a middle class.
Freeman, go ahead.
I would also say that I think that there were very deliberate attempts on the part of the capitalist class, for lack of a better phrase, to dismember unions and to dismantle the organized labor movement of the country.
Okay. That is something that I guess you could be debated somewhat, and is really
sure.
Part of our political discussion today. I guess we talk about the 1%, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, right.
I see it just as much in terms of a cultural discussion as much as just as easily in terms of a cultural discussion as an economic discussion, mm-hmm. You know.
Agnes, in the minute or so we have left, will this production walk us through the 30s, where it starts, through the present day? Do we cover all of that territory?
This production is more like the television show Laugh-In, where you get a little bit about the Pullman Porters, and then you get a little bit about Bread and Roses, and you get a little bit about the March on Hungary, and a little bit about reflecting on the situations today. So you never know what's coming next, and it is not done chronologically. And we've had to leave a lot of things out.
Who do you expect your audience to be?
I would love for our audience to be people who know nothing about organized labor. Because once you see how people who are invisible approach work, mm-hmm. I think it's a revelation.
Well, folks are going to have the chance to find out all about that. Then and Now Again, a Worker's Opera, which is not really an opera, so don't be confused by that word. More of a cabaret festival, I think, is what Agnes said. Under the direction of Agnes Wilcox, one of our guests, and Freeman Word, that will debut this weekend at the First Unitarian Church, 5700 Waterman Avenue in St. Louis. Performances are at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday evening. There will be a 3 p.m. matinee on Sunday. Right? We've had that all right?
That's perfect.
Okay, Agnes Wilcox and Freeman Word, thank you so much
thank
for being
you.
With us.
Thank you.
Break a leg, as they say, as you prepare to perform on this weekend. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.